Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the New Printing Press podcast, where we are talking about church technology, innovation, and artificial intelligence, which is the hot button topic of the last couple of years. And I'm really excited today because I got a new friend with me, Chris Heeslip, on the podcast. He is, among many other things, one of the founders of PushPay. And so, Chris, thank you, man, for being on the podcast with us today. It's awesome to talk to you.
It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, we just met on Twitter maybe a few days ago, a week or so ago. Someone had tagged us in a post together or whatever. And I was like, wait a minute. I'd found an old email for you from probably years ago that you didn't check anymore and had reached out to you a few months ago. So I'm just glad we get to connect this way. Thank God for Twitter/X. You know what I mean?
it's a great place to meet like-minded people.
Yeah. So, okay. I just watched the podcast earlier that you were on with Darren Woodson, Dallas's own Darren Woodson, by the way. Yep. Born and raised in Dallas, huge Cowboy fan. And on that podcast, you talked about just this idea of doubling your failure rate. So I want to get to like church and technology and your thoughts around all that. But you are a serial entrepreneur. You have built very, very successful businesses. Is it accurate to say one of the maybe only one or two unicorns in the faith tech space that have been built? But you talk in this podcast about failure. So like, what do you mean by this idea of like doubling your failure rate? Maybe tell a bit about like your past and starting businesses and kind of what it's taken for you to get where you are now.
Yeah. So I grew up with a single parent household, and we, you know, were barely scraping by. My mother worked three jobs and kind of grew up with that, you know, as a mindset of what was required to kind of make it in the world. I trained as an accountant, went to university, did all of that. And, but I always felt like I was supposed to kind of run my own business. And so I just kind of started businesses. I didn't know. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I kind of read all these books and kind of felt like that's what I was supposed to do. And, you know, some of them were good ideas. Some of them weren't. Some of them lasted a couple of years. Some of them, you know, were very quick to kind of open and then close them down. But I remember this kind of pivotal moment that I had when I had kind of tried 14 different businesses. I'd failed 14 times. And I was reading my Bible one day, and I came across this verse in Proverbs 23. And it says, "Do not wear yourself out to get rich, for if you chase after money, it will grow wings and fly away like an eagle towards heaven." I was like, what does that mean? So I was like, God, what is this verse about? And he said, Chris, you started businesses because you want to get something. That's not how it works in my economy. In my economy, it's about giving value. And if you give value, then you will become successful as a byproduct. And so you started 14 different things because you wanted to get something. You didn't actually care about the customers and have a deep heart to solve a problem. He said, my economy was out giving. And it was actually only like a month later that I met Elliot and we started PushPay, which was literally a giving company. And through that, we got an opportunity to come to the States. But one of the things that I kind of observe from not being from the US is that people in America are like petrified of failure. And I kind of just, maybe I don't have that gene or my mind doesn't think that way, but you know, there's like perceived risk and real risk. You know, the people say, well, if you get on a plane and, you know, this plane is going to crash. It's like, you're more likely to get hit by a car crossing the road than you are in a plane crash. So, but like people don't think that, like the irrational fear that governs that. Like, well, what if I kind of, you know, started something and it failed? Well, you know, it would be embarrassing. And it's like, well, that limiting belief is holding you back from actually serving other people. And if you want to have any kind of level of success or make an impact, then you have to be okay with some kind of failure, because whether it's picking up the phone and trying to sell something through a phone call or asking a girl out on a date, like when you put yourself out there, there's a likelihood that you could be misunderstood and that you might be rejected. And people take that very seriously. And so when you get over that, if you're an SDR just pounding the phones, making cold calls, you're going to find out very quickly that actually dealing with rejection is a core part of it, because, you know, those people aren't thinking about you. They're not rejecting you. They're just saying, hey, I don't need this product right now. And so you have to learn not to internalize that. You have to learn to say, hey, how do I take this and just continue moving forwards? So I think as an entrepreneur, one of the best things about Silicon Valley is this idea of failure is, you know, not only even embraced, but kind of really celebrated that people tried something, it didn't work, that's okay. They're going to start something else. And that's kind of part of the culture that really helps create innovation.
Mm. It's funny you mention that kind of Silicon Valley culture because, you know, I've actually chatted in actually my conversation with Dean Sweetman, which is so cool. I'm like, I'm glad that I'm like building this company and I'm just reaching out and I'm going, okay, who has done this and who does it well? How can I beg them to get on a conversation with me to learn from, which has kind of just been my playbook so far. He actually has brought that up too, about how in the church, you know, this idea of failure is, and whether that's in like a church context, we're going to launch a new campus, we're going to launch a new ministry, we're going to try a new innovative way of communication or whatever that is. It's like, we're like afraid of like, what's going to happen if this doesn't work. And the idea of Silicon Valley being this place where it's like just having kind of the courage to be able to put together a product, put it into market and see what happens. It kind of earns you like this badge of respect. And it actually, you know, if somebody raises $10, $15, $20, $30 million and fails, they're actually more likely to be able to get an opportunity to do the next thing rather than the person that's just like never tried. Like, why do you think Silicon Valley operates like that? And how can the church space maybe start to operate a bit more like that?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts about this because I've thought about it a lot because, you know, there's a risk aversion in general, not just in failure, but just like, well, I can't really do this because risk. And as I've really thought about it, the reason that I've come to is that because churches are largely funded by donations, there's this kind of paralyzing fear that I'm not a good steward if I waste your money. So, Mike, if you give some money and then we open a campus and then we decide to close that a year later, you might say, hey, I might not want to give anymore because, you know, the church has wasted that money. But if you look at the Bible, even in the parable of the talents, this idea of risk is kind of part of it. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the guy with 10, he turned into 10. The guy with 5 turned into 5. The guy with 1 said, well, I didn't want to take any risk because I might have failed. And he says, you're a wicked and lazy servant. Like, even if you had placed this with the money changes, like, that would have been good. And I get the feeling, you know, I'm an amateur theologian, but I get the feeling that if he had invested it and failed, that the punishment wouldn't be as bad as if he had just put it under a rock and buried it and then come back and said, here's your money back, right? Like, so, but there's this fear, like, I can't waste people's donations because they worked really hard for this. And I think what we have to be clear on is that if you're not willing to fail, you're never going to succeed. The capacity and the success that the organization or the results they can deliver are limited by the risk that you're willing to take. And so, that's why churches are just going to grow 5 or 10% because the thing that's going to create the breakthrough is equally likely to fail. And so, you know, Warren Buffett or any of these people use this model called a probability weighted approach, which is if I'm going to invest, you know, $10 and I have the probability of making 20, but I have a 10% likelihood of failure, that's a great investment to make. Right, weighing up the various risks and returns. But see, people don't think like that in the church, that there's a likelihood of success or failure. It's just, oh, like what would happen if it failed? I don't know how I would explain that. And so I think there's a lot of institutionalized culture of fear of failure, and there shouldn't be, because I think donors are like, we want to see you growing. We want to see you succeeding, and we're okay if you try something that doesn't work.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, right? If someone's giving, they want to see the money being put to work, right, in ways that furthers the mission. And the idea is, like, if you try something and fail, it's still an experiment that is, you know, the end goal is still growth. The end goal is still impact, right? The end goal is still like kingdom impact. So, okay. So in talking about failure, obviously, you know, you've tried a bunch of different businesses and it's pretty, like, at least I've found trying the feeling of failure, you kind of know those signals, right? I think you kind of know after a little bit, like, oh, this is just not maybe going to go the way I thought that it was going to go. Since launching Pulpit AI, we've, like, you know, you start talking about things like product market fit and traction, right? And these words that are like thrown out. And if you ask 100 people what those terms mean, they'll give you 100 different answers, right? early days, push pay, you guys are trying to get the church to kind of adopt this new technology. Like, was there a moment where you were like, oh, I think people are starting to actually get it? Like, what was that unlock in those early days where you're like, man, maybe this thing is actually going to work the way that we think it's going to work? Was there a moment like that?
Yeah. So let me just say product market fit. Like, my opinion on this is that it's a myth. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I think it exists, but like, how do you measure it? Like, I don't know. And I honestly thought that PushPay could fail at any moment up until about 6 months before I finished there. So, you know, it's not like you kind of get 2 years into it and you're like, now I can really sit back and take it easy. You know, anything that's growing quickly is going to have a whole bunch of problems that come with it. And so you really don't have time to sit around and be like, well, this is actually working. In hindsight, it looks that way. But at the time, it's like just putting out fire to fire to fire. And that's the job of an entrepreneur, is just to continue solving problems until you kind of get to the destination. But I think that, just if I step back and say, if I was starting something from scratch, the mission behind it is kind of almost more important than everything else, because I can believe in the mission of where we're going and what we do. The how might change, the what might change, but the why we're doing this and the where we're going is never going to change. And so once I have that, like, I throw myself 110% into, well, now how do I get from A to B? And every time I tell my team this, because when you do startups, you just run into a wall and you fail and you get up and you try again. There's only two potential outcomes: either A, we succeed, or B, we learn. There's not, like, failure is not failure. Failure is just learning. Like, we learn something that didn't work. And even in Tome, which is now, you know, really the B side, we tried so many different things and it was just failure, 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 failure along the way. And never once did it kind of demoralize me, because we just learned a bunch of stuff that didn't work. So by the time you get somewhere, you're like, oh, this is actually working. Now, you know, we have a very clear pathway. And now it's just, how do you scale it from point A to point B? So I think the kind of the initial part is, if God's called you to it, like, just, it's going to be hard. Most people quit before they get to the part where it goes like this. Mm-hmm. And we were chatting before we jumped on here, but, you know, people don't realize the 4.5 years that we were doing PushPay before it started doing a hockey stick growth curve. And that's the part, like, 90% of people will quit before they get to the part where the hockey stick growth kicks in. And it's not just running into a wall and being stubborn. It's continually changing and trying and validating things and then finding the thing that actually is going to work. And so actually when we first came to the US, the very first customer rolled out PushPay and saw about a $500,000 increase in giving just over 12 months from using the product. And that's where it's like, hey, this is going to work. But now the problem is not, is it going to work? The problem is, how do I explain this to other people and convince them that this is going to work? Because I've solved one problem, right? It works. At least it works for this particular church. But now the second problem is, well, how do I explain this and tell a story around it? Because, you know, having one church, people become skeptical. Did you change the numbers? Is this just a good story? Like, is this real? Mm-hmm. And so you just, because you have one thing that worked one time, you just now have a whole new set of problems to try and solve.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. That makes so much sense. I one thing that, you know, you mentioned, like, how are we talking about this? What's the story? And that's sort of like the practicality of what it does and the problem it solves. But it's also kind of like the bigger picture, right? Like the more like macro story that you're trying to tell. So one thing that's cool is, obviously the podcast is called The New Printing Press, but you did a talk, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, around this idea of the printing press, and used that as like a main feature in this talk about technology. Like, first of all, that's amazing, because we've been literally saying from the very beginning, and it's not like we're not originals in saying this, but AI as a new version of the printing press that will forever change the world is really what we believe AI is. But, like, I don't know, talk about that idea. I watched that talk and it was so cool, and I just, so cool that it's such an alignment. But you kind of said it's like the most significant events in church history other than you know, the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ is the invention of the printing press. Talk to me about that idea. Where did that come from? And how did you use that story in those days as a way to kind of unlock people's vision of what not just technology, but also Pushpay could do for their mission?
Yeah, I think the history of church and technology is kind of fraught with this idea of risk-taking and kind of, you know, how we just talked about trying and failing. And when it comes to technology, churches are so averse to using it to actually reach people. And I'll talk about the printing press in a second, but the year after that, I talked about Billy Graham. And one of the things people don't realize is that he was like the early pioneer of radio and then eventually television to use it. And he had this amazing quote. He said, "I see no contradiction between the old, old message of the cross and the newest means to broadcast that message." And he leaned into to radio, television, you know, live broadcast from Madison Square Garden. And so part of what we're trying to do is say to churches, look, you know, you really have to understand that these heroes of the faith that you have in your mind were early adopters and pioneers of technology. And so Billy Graham is one, you know, Martin Luther, right? If we look back at church history, he probably had the biggest impact on the Protestant church. He invented the Protestant church. But the idea that just shall live by faith, you know, well, what people don't realize is about 80 years before Luther, there was this little invention that occurred by a guy called Gutenberg. And Gutenberg was an entrepreneur. He raised money. He ran out of money multiple times. He had a very contentious relationship with his VC called Faust, Johann Faust. And so what people can't do in their mind is draw a direct correlation from the invention of this tool to the Protestant Reformation that happened 80 years later. Because without the invention of the printing press, the leaflets and the way that Luther went about trying to communicate and convince people that he was correct around the Protestant Reformation would not have happened. And the whole movement was putting the Bibles in the hands of the people in a language that they could read it and understand. And they start reading through this and they say, hey, you told me that there should be this thing called indulgences, but I'm reading the Bible. It doesn't say that here. You said that we should get saved through good works, but I'm reading the Bible. It says the just shall live by faith. And so when people started getting the Bible into their hands, they started saying, wait a second, like God, there's no person between me and God. I don't need a pope. I can read the Bible myself and I can pray directly to God. And so that singular tool led to a reformation. And so what I was trying to explain was that tools lead to reformations in the church. And if you think about the field of biology, bacteria, the man who invented the microscope led to a breakthrough in antibiotics, right? Mm. When you have tools change, the way that things get done change, there's like a step change in terms of the impact that can be had. And so we live in a world today where it's more possible than ever to share your message. You can just record a video on your phone and put it on YouTube, and it can be seen by hundreds of millions of people. And yet how many churches have actually sat down and said, how do I utilize this technology to reach people beyond the four walls of my local church, right? Or you can have people on a small group on a Zoom call, or like whatever the example is, but we should be leaning into this. And the churches that I know that are the most innovative in America are actually looking at ways to use technology to say, hey, I actually have a calling to a group that's bigger than the people who are in my local community. Actually, you know, if you look back 20 years, the whole world changed from geographic based to alignment around interests and concepts. And so what the church hasn't embraced is that no longer do people attend a church based on what's closest to me geographically. I attend church based on how I align with it from a psychographic perspective. You know, I know a lot of the data for these churches in the States, but you look at Elevation Church in North Carolina, look at Irwin McManus in LA, like they have more people tuning in to their sermons from around America on social media than they do people who are sitting in the pews. And that idea that people are looking for a church that they understand and identify with is like a radical concept. Because we're just like, hey, I'm called to, you know, North Dallas. But when you realize now that's not how it is anymore, people don't even work for places that have buildings in their local geography. They remote work. And yet we assume that we can reach people in our 5-mile radius around us. Like, That's just not the truth anymore. So that was the gist of the idea.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I mean, even to add to that, I mean, look at what, you know, Church Home, as being from Seattle, what like Church Home has done, right? Like they just said, man, we're, I think the line they used was, we're spending millions to reach thousands in our buildings. You know, what if we were able to figure out a way to flip that? And even in what they've done, like, again, whether you like a decision like that, or I know there's a lot of pastors that don't love that like online first model, but the reality is everybody has a different calling and a different passion and a different like mantle on their life to go, how can we reach more people? You know? And I think you're totally, totally right about that. Well, I mean,
like, go ahead. Just here's the idea, right? Like I'm not that smart, but like, if you think about how all marketing is done, there's a funnel. And so, yeah, top of funnel, you know, in the church, if we can just use a very, you know, crude example from business, like, yeah, there's a lot of people tuning in to watch you give a sermon online. So those people aren't members in your church, but those people are people that are engaging with your content, and through, you know, Marketo or HubSpot, like they would tell you what you have to do to those people is figure out how to get them to take a next step, fill in their information. Can we pray for you? Can we, like, how can we help you? Yes, they're remote. So the goal is not to have a whole bunch of people watching online in a virtual church where you never meet with people in real life. The goal is to say, all these people are already coming to your content, assumably. What do we do with them once they come? And it's just that lack of understanding that there's actually a way to engage these people, because there's hurt and broken people looking for Jesus who are just watching online. And it's your obligation to engage those people, to say, how do we get them to engage with us? Give us their information so that we can call them, text them, give them our devotions that we put together, and start to bring them down so that we can eventually say, let's connect you with someone in your area who can help you. And I think that strategic idea is what the church is lacking, that don't be afraid of online services.
Right.
It's just, it's never going to ever, in the history of the world, it will never replace in-person gatherings. Never. But where does it fit in the technology stack and the funnel to drive people towards the outcome that we really want them towards?
Yeah. Well, it's like, I've used this example before and I think it kind of works. Like, I'm, you know, in the early days of the NFL, I'm a huge like NFL history fan, right? Like the owners were very much against televising the games because they were worried, hey, if we put this on television, that means less people are going to want to come to the in-person experience. But in reality, it actually did the opposite. It lifted the brand and created so many fans so that now, you know, every single professional sports brand and team is like, it's so much more about how many people are tuning in from all these other channels than who's actually in the stadium, right? And I think that's like kind of what you're saying.
And a point on that, right? Like, so I have a thing that like God speaks, or like the universe is, you know, called a universe. It means uni means one, verse means word. God speaks one word like this. And sometimes the business people, you know, the Bible says in Matthew, sometimes the children of darkness are smarter than the children, or wiser than children of light. So they hear the word and they say, oh, you know, what people care about now is experience and experiences. So before it was, you know, Spotify and you could buy a, you know, CD and all this. Now I can get music for free, right? It's like, so the distribution problem is solved. There's so much music that's available. And so what becomes the special part of music? It's the live experience. And people are paying $2, $3, $4, more, I don't know, whatever they pay to go to a Taylor Swift. Like they pay thousands of dollars, right? And so we're in the church and we're saying like, people don't want to come to me. I'm like, you missed the point. Elevation call their weekend gatherings experiences. And they have put so much time and attention about planning how you get from the car park to the building. They have like a specific elevation fragrance that they put in the AC ducts.
Yeah, because I remember hearing that. Yeah,
the experience is the thing that matters, right? And if people are coming because, what can't they get on their Zoom calls for work? What can't they get on, you know, watching all this content? You know what they can't get? They can't get an experience.
Right.
And Pew tells us 94% of people, the number one reason they go to church is to experience God. Okay. Scientifically proven by Pew. And so you can say, well, that shouldn't be the case, but that is the case. That's what people are saying. And so you can say, well, I don't like that, but like, that's how it is. And so the more you realize you lean into that and say there's actually a place for online content and engaging people through free, you know, stuff that's mm-hmm. freely distributed. But the goal is to move them through a process to get them to come to an experience in your mm-hmm. building. And mm-hmm. people are hungry and crying out and are like, you can be water in a desert to these people who are like, I just need to experience God. I don't mm-hmm. even know God, but if you put some special experience on, I want to come to it. Like, that's what it's about. Why do people go on Easter to church? Mm-hmm. Because it's a special experience where they get mm-hmm. to, you know, be part of a gathering of people. Like, mm-hmm. that's what you're talking about with the NFL. It's like, mm-hmm. people want that experience to say, man, I was at the game when Tom Brady threw that touchdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's so true. I want to, maybe we'll get to AI at the end because I don't want to like change topics and then come back to this because I want to hear your thoughts around that. But, you know, we've been talking a lot about this online experience and the way, you know, you are you know, behind B-Side, this app that launched, I don't know what, maybe 6 months ago, mm-hmm. 7 months ago. With Tim Ross and Lecrae and a lot of other, you know, faith-based voices. Just in the short amount of time, like, yeah, what have you learned about the conversations that people are having or willing to have online that they're maybe not willing to have in person? Because, you know, we were talking before this about, you know, someone like a Tim Ross, it's like he's willing to say things and talk about things. And honestly, even just answer questions. Like, part of what I love that he does is he's just like, all right, send through the questions and I'm just going to start answering them. What are you guys learning about the way people are talking about and exploring faith online just by maybe share with us what B-Side is, but then what are the learnings that you guys are seeing through that?
Yeah. So if you just go back 20 years, there was this kind of like shift change that happened in the culture, right? I'm just like an amateur student. I love to observe what's happening in culture. In the 90s, it was like everything was a sitcom. Everything was perfect. You had, you know, Friends and these kind of shows that were scripted and canned laughter, the whole thing, right? And then somewhere in the early 2000s, the zeitgeist culture changed and it became reality television. And reality television was like, I don't want to see someone looking perfect with all made up anymore. I want to see someone running around the world, fall over, scrape their knee. You know, like I want to drop people off on an island and it's like, see what happens, right? So overnight, the culture shifted. And the church was still saying, you should be perfect. The people we put on stage are perfect. Everyone should be perfect. And the culture is saying, you should embrace the fact that, you know, be vulnerable, share the things you're struggling with. Like even the advertisements started changing. I don't want to see a car anymore that's in a showroom that's in pristine condition. I want to see that sucker drive up a mountain spitting mud everywhere. And it's like, you know, they're dropping watches out of planes and they pick it up and they're like, look, I can drop this out of 10,000 feet and it still works. And yet with the church, we're still like, everyone's perfect here. We got it all together. And so what happens is like millennials in the 20 to 40 kind of year age bracket right now, right? Think about that. Millennials, by the way, is now, you know, the largest part of the workforce. What they really want is this idea of transparency. And what the church has been feeding them is like everything's perfect, canned laughter. It's a veneer, mm-hmm. right? And so it's like what the topics that millennials want to hear about, and not just millennials, but in general, is like, I don't want everything to be perfect because life is not perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm not perfect. I'm struggling in these areas. And what I find the answer that the church tells me is like, pray harder, read your Bible. Like, let's actually have a conversation about that. And so what Tim Ross has done is come along and say, let's create a safe space to have these conversations. And these are the conversations that the church should be having because people are struggling with mental health and struggling with addiction and struggling with LGBT issues and how to engage the culture and their friends, people they work with around these topics that are so contentious and to a lesser degree, politics. Like, how do you engage people with the great news that Jesus has? And the answer is you have to create a safe space to be able to even have that conversation. And so that's what Tim has created. And so, you know, we said, hey, how do we partner with you to help put structure around this and to build this into not just one podcast, but really a movement that's engaging people in culture? And there's a lot of people who look at it and say, hey, like, you know, this thing is not for me. And it's like, that's fine. You know, I have a lot of friends who are Christians who just don't attend church anymore because they don't find it relevant to them. And again, we can say, well, that shouldn't be the case, but that just is what they're doing. And they're looking for, where can I have a conversation about the fact that my brother's gay and I don't know how to engage him in a conversation. And so when Tim says, hey, let's talk about these topics, he's just really tapping into the fact that that's what people are, mm-hmm. are kind of hungry to hear about and to discuss, you know, how mm-hmm. Jesus applies to it. Because, and this is what he says, the Bible is full of all these kind of crazy stories. Like mm-hmm. if you read the Bible, you find out all kinds of whack stuff has happened. And so why are we trying to cover over that and pretend like those parts are not in the Bible?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it, what's so great about him is I think, like, you know, oftentimes if you don't, you know, the internet now, everybody has an opinion and a critique on everything, right? And so a clip gets put up. I think the thing that to me, what I love about what Tim does is, like, at least half the time, like, because I'm subscribed to his YouTube, right? So if I go on YouTube and it shows that he's live, I'll click on it. It's like, what are they talking about? You know, half the time he's just got his Bible open on his lap and he's just walking through scripture. Like it's not like it's not just like a talk show where we're like sitting around talking about some stuff. He literally is teaching the Bible in a different context. And I think that is so cool. It's like people are like engaging with scripture and they're engaging with biblical truth, but they're also talking about all these other things that are going on in their life. And he's literally just got his Bible open going, let me flip. Okay. Here you go. Let's talk about this. And I think that to me is what's so unique about what you guys are doing. So yeah, that's really, really cool.
I think the Bible has a lot to say about mental health and addiction mm-hmm. and all these, like, you know, it's just oftentimes we skip over those parts. And so, you know, 2 Kings 19 about Elijah, after coming down from slaying the prophets of Baal, he has a mental breakdown.
He says, I want to die. He literally says, I want to die.
Exactly. And yeah. So anyway, it's just like, but when was the last time you heard a sermon about that? You
know? Right.
Like, I know. We just want to skip right past that. Let's talk about giving or something.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, before we close, let's talk AI. So I'm making an assumption here, knowing that you're an entrepreneur and an innovator. Almost all the entrepreneurs and builders and innovators I know, when it comes to new technologies, do their best to educate themselves on what this is, what's it going to do for the world, and develop kind of an idea and a thesis around it. Like, what has been your, I don't know if you could give me a thesis, a thought, a philosophy around AI, what you think about it in regards to how the church could and should use it. What are your thoughts? I mean, do you think it is as big as, let's say, the mobile phone or the internet or the printing press? Like, give me your thoughts. Would love to hear.
Yeah. I think that every 10 to 15 years, there's a step change in technology. And if you go back, mobile was the last one. And really, like, you know, just from a pure business perspective, Pushpay capitalized on the rise of mobile and created mobile giving. Like, that was kind of, you're riding the wave, like, so, you know, and you go back before that and you look at, you know, the Walkman and the iPod and like these different kind of step changes in technology. AI is the next one. And mm-hmm. it's not debatable. It's not questionable. Like, AI is here and it is the next change that is coming to technology, right? So the question then is, well, what does that mean to us and to the church as a whole? And that's where it's hard, because you're really just trying to predict the future. And so when you're trying to end this situation, you're saying, well, you know, what does this mean and how could we think about it? The question is not what will change, but what won't change. Like, that's what I like to think about. Because, you know, it's really hard to predict the second and third and fourth order effects of technology. But what we know is not going to change is that great communication is still going to be massively valuable. People still want to come to church for an experience. People still want to meet in groups, right? So, like, these things are not going to change. We know that. Now, the question is, how do we use the technology to do these things that are not going to change better? And, you know, whether it's, you know, creating better sermons, I've used ChatGPT, like, in fact, I used it like 2 weeks ago to put together a talk for my all hands. I was like, give me an example that I could insert here. And in the old days, maybe you had to store those in some kind of card-based filing system, mm-hmm. you know, of kind of witty quips that you can do. But now you have those at your fingertips, or you can help generate one or make it even better through using AI to do that. And so I think great communication is never going to go out of fashion, because that's just how it is. But improving the way that you storytell and leverage technology to kind of get more done with less effectively, like, I think AI, the change of AI is going to be as big as mobile.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Cool. Well, yeah, I guess lastly, anything that you're just, you know, what are some cool stuff that you're seeing? Is there an AI tool that you're using? Is there like a really cool application of it that you've seen? It doesn't even have to be for church, just anything that you've seen out there that you're like, man, this is mind blowing that this is able to happen now.
I've played with a bunch of them. I think that we're still like in the early days. Like if we're talking about the iPhone equivalent, we're in like 08, 09 kind of thing. You know, I think we haven't seen truly the transformational power of AI yet. I think that I love what you guys are doing, you know, which is like, how do we help people do more with less? Like, that's the idea that AI is really like, the efficiency gains from AI are going to be next level. And so I think we're really in the early innings. And I think that some of the core ideas are there. But actually, when you go think about the iPhone, it launched and everyone kind of panned it and said it was useless. And then wasn't until really the iPhone 3, the iPhone 3G, that it was like, wow, this is actually transformational. And people could start to see it. And I think for most people, they're like, AI is kind of interesting. But when you can start to see it and you're like, you know, AI could write code for this particular website that I'm doing without an engineer, that's transformational. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
and huge. One thing on that, right? Like, I think that AI is never going to tell you kind of what to do or what to say. It's going to tell you how to say it better. And so what happens if you like think about any kind of system or systematic approach, like when you solve one part, the bottleneck just kind of moves along the system. And so when you solve the like, how do I say this thing better? What happens is the what becomes the part of the equation that becomes like more valuable. So the people who are actually kind of figuring out what to put into AI are the people who are going to create the most value, especially in business over the next, you know, decade or two. You know, and so that really becomes the part, which is, you know, whether you're a pastor trying to figure out, you know, like how to leverage the technology, well, you still have to figure out what you want to talk about. And then you can leverage the technology to say it better and more effectively. But if you're still struggling with the what and how to engage the culture through, you know, the message that you're sharing, I don't know that AI is going to solve that problem for you.
Man, that's really good. That's such a good thought and a good perspective. Chris, man, thank you for taking the time to chat with me today and be on here. And we'll definitely have to have you back. I think
we'd love to.
So much wisdom and value, and just really appreciate you. Appreciate what you've done for the church, building what you've built. So we're thankful for that and honor that. And man, we will do this again soon. Thanks for coming on the podcast, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great.